SDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We now have a federal government that will threaten or arrest an elected official or even everyday American citizens who have broken no laws, committed no crimes, and done nothing wrong.
It's outrageous for the federal government to be threatening the governor of Wisconsin or any governor with arrest. Due process is a fundamental principle of U.S. law, and it is the command of the Constitution that the president swore an oath to uphold.
Wisconsin's Democratic Governor Tommy Evers pushes back after Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, says Wisconsin officials could be arrested over local policies that defy Trump's mass deportation agenda. This comes after FBI agents arrested a Milwaukee judge. We'll go to Wisconsin to speak with Lisa Graves, former deputy assistant attorney general, now working on a book on the Supreme Court. Then to award-winning journalist and author Naomi Klein about her new piece, The Rise of End Times Fascism.
Israel, what it represents is a posture towards the suffering of the world. And this is what we're up against. And this is, in fact, what everyone is up against. In the world, this is why Gustavo Petro said so early after October 7th that what he sees in the genocide in Gaza, and he called it Global 1933, is the future of the world's poor if we stay on this course, right?
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Israeli military is calling up tens of thousands of reservists as Israel's Security Cabinet has unanimously approved plans to expand its assault on Gaza, where Israel's already killed at least 52,000 Palestinians over the past 18 months. That figure is believed to be a vast undercount. Israel's killed more than 2,400 Palestinians since it broke the ceasefire in mid-March. One Israeli official told CNN the new plan for Gaza involves, quote, the conquest of territory and remaining there, unquote. This comes as Israel's devastating blockade on all humanitarian and food aid has entered its third month. Health officials in Gaza say at least 57 Palestinians have already starved to death. According to UNICEF, more than 9,000 children have been admitted for treatment for acute malnutrition so far this year. Aid groups are blasting a new Israeli proposal to take control of aid distribution and put U.S. security contractors in charge. Jan Egeland of the Norwegian Refugee Council said, quote, they want to manipulate and militarize all aid to civilians, forcing us to deliver supplies through hubs designed by the Israeli military. Unquote. Meanwhile, Israel continued to attack Palestinians across Gaza over the weekend. One strike in Khan Yunis killed newlyweds Ala Abu Al-Anin and Hala Zurab one day after their wedding. Survivors of the blast denounced the Israeli attack.
I wish my voice could reach the whole world to tell them that we are oppressed. Our children die of hunger every day. They are torn apart in front of our eyes, and we cannot do anything.
In other news from Gaza, one of Pope Francis's Pope Mobiles is being turned into a mobile healthcare unit for children in Gaza. Pope Francis gave his blessing to the initiative just before his death. Tension is escalating between Israel and Yemen after a Houthi missile hit near Ben-Gurion Airport outside Tel Aviv. The Houthis said it carried out the strike, quote, in rejection of Israel's crime of genocide, unquote. A Houthi military spokesperson vowed more attacks on Israel.
The Yemeni armed forces announced that they will work to impose a comprehensive air blockade on the Israeli enemy by repeatedly targeting airports. Most notably, Lod Airport, known in Israel as Ben-Gurion Airport.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed to respond to the Houthi attack and threatened Iran as well. Meanwhile, the U.S. is continuing to bomb Yemen on an almost daily basis. At least 16 people were injured in U.S. airstrikes overnight in the capital, Sana'a. In an interview on NBC's Meet the Press, President Trump said he does not know if he needs to uphold the Constitution. Trump made the comment when questioned by Kristen Welker.
Your Secretary of State says everyone who's here, citizens and non-citizens, deserve due process. Do you agree, Mr. President?
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know.
Well, the Fifth Amendment says
I don't know. It might say that, but if you're talking about that, then we'd have to have 1 million or 2 million or 3 million trials. We have thousands of people that are some murderers and some drug dealers and some of the worst people on earth.
But
some of the worst, most dangerous people on earth. And I was elected to get them the hell out of here, and the courts are holding me from doing it.
But even given those numbers that you're talking about, don't you need to uphold the Constitution of the United States as president?
I don't know.
In immigration news, Wisconsin's Democratic governor, Tony Evers, is pushing back after Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, suggested he and other Wisconsin officials could be arrested over local immigration policies. Homan made the veiled threat when questioned last week by the far-right website Gateway Pundit.
Why not just arrest the leaders who are harboring and shielding illegal aliens, actually terrorists, from deportation?
Wait to see what's coming.
Yeah. And, well, real quick, your comments on the Wisconsin governor sending directives to state agencies to not comply with ICE and actually stop your deportation efforts.
Wait to see what's coming.
Wait to see what's coming, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers responded in this video posted online.
Overnight, Republican lawmakers piled on, encouraging the Trump administration to arrest me. Showing threats like this should be of concern to every Wisconsinite and every American who cares about this country and the values hold here.
We'll have more on this story after headlines. We'll go to Wisconsin. In related news, the Justice Department has sued the city of Denver and the state of Colorado over their sanctuary laws, claiming they interfere with federal immigration enforcement. In other immigration news, the Trump administration's designated two Haitian gangs as terrorist groups. Many experts fear the move could deepen the humanitarian crisis in Haiti if aid groups pull back out of fear of being prosecuted for dealing with armed groups. President Trump says he's directing the Bureau of Prisons to reopen and enlarge Alcatraz, the infamous jail located on an island in the San Francisco Bay. The prison has been closed for over 60 years and is a popular tourist spot that makes tens of millions of dollars every year. Meanwhile, the White House has posted an AI image of Trump depicted as the Pope, prompting outrage. The New York State Catholic Conference of Bishops blasted the president, saying, quote, "We just buried our beloved Pope Francis, and the cardinals are about to enter a solemn conclave to elect a new successor of St. Peter. Do not mock us," they said. In more Trump news, the U.S. Army confirmed there will be a large military parade in Washington to mark the Army's 250th anniversary and the birthday of President Trump, his 79th birthday on June 14th. Some 6,600 soldiers are expected to take part, along with 150 military vehicles and 50 military aircraft. On Sunday, Trump also announced a new 100% tariff on foreign-made films, claiming that they pose a, quote, national security threat. The announcement came as a surprise to Hollywood studios. On Friday, the Trump administration filed an emergency appeal asking the Supreme Court to let members of Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency access sensitive social security records of hundreds of millions of people. In March, one federal judge described DOGE's efforts as a fishing expedition that was, quote, in search of a fraud epidemic based on little more than suspicion, unquote. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum has forcefully rejected President Trump's idea of sending U.S. troops into Mexico to combat drug cartels. On Saturday, she detailed a call she held with Trump last month.
In one of the calls, the U.S. President Donald Trump said it was important for the U.S. Army to enter Mexico to help us in the fight against drug trafficking. And I want to say that's true. In some of the calls, he said, quote, "How can we help you fight drug trafficking? I propose that the U.S. Army come in to help you." And you know what I told him? "No, President Trump. The territory is sacrosanct. Sovereignty is sacrosanct. Sovereignty is not for sale. Sovereignty is loved and defended."
President Trump lashed out at President Sheinbaum, saying, quote, "She's so afraid of the cartel she can't even think straight," Trump said. In Sudan, the death toll in the city of Al-Houd has risen to 300 days after the paramilitary rapid support forces say they captured the key city in West Kordofan State, which borders Darfur. Among the 300 killed in the RSF attacks were at least 21 children. Separately, on Sunday, RSF drone attacks struck a military port in the city of Port Sudan. It's the first direct attacks on the de facto capital of Sudan's military-led government since the devastating civil war broke out over 2 years ago. This all comes as the International Court of Justice is ruling today in Sudan's genocide case against the United Arab Emirates, which Sudan accuses of fueling the RSF. In South Sudan, at least 7 people were killed, including a 9-month-old baby, and another 20 were injured in bombings on a market in Fanga County in the greater Upper Nile region. The group Doctors Without Borders said the explosions completely destroyed its pharmacy and damaged its hospital, the area's only hospital. The perpetrator has not been confirmed, but the deadly attack comes at a time of increasing conflict amidst fears of a new civil war in South Sudan after a power-sharing deal collapsed in March. In Australia, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and his ruling Labor Party will remain in power after defeating Conservative Peter Dutton of the Liberal Party in Saturday's national elections. Dutton's hard-line immigration plans and criticism of China earned him comparisons to Trump by Australians, who cited the high cost of living as their top concern. Dutton was roundly rejected by voters Saturday and even lost his own seat, despite leading in the polls a few months ago. The victory for Australia's Labor Party comes a week after Canadians also rejected the Conservative challenger in national elections. Prime Minister Albanese delivered a victory speech in Sydney.
"In this time of global uncertainty, Australians have chosen optimism and determination. Australians have chosen to face global challenges the Australian way, looking after each other while building for the future."
Earlier today, the Australian Prime Minister said he had a warm conversation with Trump on tariffs and the joint Australia-US-UK defense pact. In Romania, the hard-right nationalist pro-Trump politician George Simion won the first round of presidential voting Sunday. He'll face Bucharest Mayor Nicușor Dan in a runoff on May 18th. The election comes 5 months after Romania's constitutional court annulled a presidential election won by the far-right ultra-nationalist Calin Georgescu, who was barred from running again after being charged with campaign violations and being involved with a fascist organization. Despite the charges, Simion has vowed to give him a leadership post if he wins the runoff. An Illinois landlord who stormed the home of his tenants and fatally stabbed a 6-year-old Palestinian-American boy in October 2023 has been sentenced to 53 years in prison. In February, a jury had found Joseph Chuba guilty of murder and hate crimes for killing Wadi Al-Fayoum, who he stabbed 26 times. Ahmed Rahab, the executive director of CARE Chicago, said, quote, "No sentence can restore what was taken, but today's outcome delivers a necessary measure of justice. Wadi was an innocent child. He was targeted because of who he was, Muslim, Palestinian, and loved," he said. Questions are mounting about Pennsylvania Democratic Senator John Fetterman's ability to continue serving after recent reports that former and current staffers are increasingly concerned about his erratic behavior. Senator Fetterman, who had a stroke in 2022, had run as a progressive, but has sharply shifted to the right. Last year, in May, his former chief of staff wrote a 1,600-word email to the medical director of the Traumatic Brain Injury and Neuropsychiatry Unit at Walter Reed, expressing concern over Fetterman's mental health, including his, quote, conspiratorial thinking, megalomania, and rambling, unquote. New York Magazine reveals that in a private meeting in February, Senator Fetterman spoke against Israel's then ceasefire, saying, quote, let's get back to killing, unquote. During a discussion on Gaza and the Palestinians, he reportedly said, quote, kill them all, unquote. In February, The Intercept reported there had been an exodus from Fetterman's staff, in part due to his shift on Israel and his willingness to work with President Trump. Many of Fetterman's small donors have also asked for him to return their campaign donations to him. The world's richest man, Elon Musk, now has his own city. On Saturday, residents in South Texas voted to make the home of Musk's SpaceX rocket company its own city called Starbase. It's located about 25 miles east of Brownsville. Most of the voters are believed to have been SpaceX employees. The South Texas Environmental Justice Network campaigned against Starbase becoming its own city, warning it could lead to more environmental damage to the area. In other news from Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott has signed the country's largest school voucher program into law, making Texas the 16th state to make taxpayer funds available to pay for private schools. So-called school choice is a Republican push program which sucks money from budget-strapped public schools and largely benefits wealthier families. This comes as the conservative-led U.S. Supreme Court appears poised to allow publicly funded charter schools to start including religious schools. In more education news, the Justice Department last week terminated a half-century-old school desegregation order in Louisiana. The Plaquemines Parish School Board came under a federal consent decree in 1966 for refusing to comply with the landmark Brown v. Board decision outlawing segregation in schools. Trump's Department of Justice said it's, quote, correcting wrongs from the past. And in more related news, the Education Department has launched an investigation into a Chicago school program designed to help black students. The federal agency said it could withhold federal funding from the district over the Black Student Success Plan, alleging it discriminates against non-black students. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we go to Wisconsin, where Democratic Governor Tony Evers is pushing back after Trump border czar Tom Homan threatened to arrest him and other Wisconsin officials who defy Trump's mass deportation agenda. And then we'll speak with Naomi Klein.
Sailing down my dirty stream, still I love it. And I'll keep the dream that someday, though maybe not this year, my Hudson River will once again run clear. It starts high in the mountains of the north, crystal clear and icy trickles forth, with just a few floating wrappers of chewing gum dropped by some hikers to warn of things to come. At Glens Falls, 5,000 honest hands work at the con.
Pete Seeger's My Dirty Stream, the Hudson River song. We remember his songs in a spirit after what would have been his 106th birthday on Saturday, May 3rd. To see all our interviews with Pete Seeger, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today in Wisconsin, where Democratic Governor Tony Evers is pushing back after Trump's so-called border czar Tom Homan suggested Wisconsin officials could be arrested if they follow local immigration policies that defy Trump's mass deportation agenda. He made the veiled threat when questioned last Thursday by the far-right website Gateway Pundit.
Your comments on the Wisconsin governor sending directives to state agencies to not comply with ICE and actually stop your deportation efforts.
Wait to see what's coming.
Any updates on the military?
I meant what I said. You cannot support what we're doing. And you can support sanctuary cities. That's what you want to do. But if you cross that line of impediment or knowingly harboring, concealing illegal alien, that is a felony. And we're treated as such.
Wait to see what's coming, said White House border czar Tom Homan, threatening Governor Tony Evers. Well, on Friday, the Wisconsin governor responded to Homan in a video statement posted online. Evers spoke in part about a memo he issued last month to Wisconsin state employees that echoes guidance given by other state and city governments, which instructs them to call a state lawyer if an ICE agent or other federal agent shows up at their workplace and questions them. It also tells workers not to give agents access to non-public areas. This is an excerpt of the video statement by Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers.
Yesterday, a Trump administration official, in not so many words, apparently threatened to arrest me for distributing guidance that asked state agency employees to consult with an attorney if federal agents show up at state buildings with legal documents. The goal of this guidance was simple: to provide clear, consistent instructions to state employees and ensure they have a lawyer to help them comply with all federal and state laws. Nothing more, nothing less. But Republicans and their right-wing allies, including Elon Musk, lied about this guidance, spread misinformation, accused me of doing things I didn't do or say, and fueled a fake controversy of their own creation. Now, I'm used to Republicans and the right wing lying about me. It comes with a job. But this time, these lies came at a cost. I haven't broken the law. I haven't committed a crime, and I've never encouraged or directed anyone to break any laws or commit any crimes. But when President Trump's hand-picked appointee, Tom Homan, was asked about me and this guidance after he apparently threatened to arrest elected officials across the country, he said, "Wait till you see what's coming. Wait till you see what's coming." Overnight, Republican lawmakers piled on, encouraging the Trump administration to arrest me. Chilling threats like this should be of concern to every Wisconsinite and every American who cares about this country and the values held here. We live in the United States of America, folks. We are a country of laws. The rule of law matters. Following the law matters. In this country, the federal government doesn't get to abuse its power to threaten everyday Americans. In this country, the federal government doesn't get to arrest American citizens who have not committed a crime. In this country, we don't threaten to persecute people just because they belong to a different political party. These threats represent a concerning trajectory in this country. We now have a federal government that will threaten or arrest an elected official or even everyday American citizens who have broken no laws, committed no crimes, and done nothing wrong. And as disgusted as I am about the continued actions of the Trump administration, I'm not afraid. I've never once been discouraged from doing the right thing, and I will not start today.
Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers speaking in a video posted online Friday. This comes after the Trump administration escalated its attacks on judges and immigrants the week before, when FBI agents arrested Milwaukee, Wisconsin County Judge Hannah Dugan on charges of obstructing justice and concealing an immigrant from arrest as federal agents waited in the courthouse hallway. She opened a side door for the immigrant to pass out of. Meanwhile, in an interview on NBC's Meet the Press, President Trump says he doesn't know if he needs to uphold the Constitution or if people in the U.S. are entitled to due process rights. For more, we're joined in Superior, Wisconsin by Lisa Graves. She's the former Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the United States, now the director and founder of the policy research group True North Research, and co-host of the podcast Legal AF. Her forthcoming book is titled Without Precedent: How Chief Justice Roberts and his accomplices rewrote the Constitution and dismantled our rights. We welcome you back to Democracy Now, Lisa. without precedent could also describe our president, Donald Trump. If you could first respond to this direct threat against the Wisconsin governor, Tony Evers.
Well, it really is an outrageous act, this veiled threat against Governor Evers and any elected official in the United States. What Governor Evers did was issue guidance to consult lawyers. Of course, state and local officials have a right to consult lawyers when they encounter federal agents or local and state agents. And so it's really nothing abnormal at all that the governor did. And what's abnormal, what's outrageous, is the threats being made by this administration. In fact, what we're seeing, obviously, what we're witnessing is this escalation of attacks on pillars of civil society, as well as on the actual responsibilities under the Constitution that the president and senators and other officers take an oath to uphold.
So, do you see Wisconsin itself as a target? I mean, going back to Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson, Wisconsin often seen as a kind of model for the country. And do you see this as going back to retaliation for Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, complete defeat in Wisconsin over his support for the conservative judge that lost by not a few percentage points, shocking everyone, including, I think, the judge who won, the Democratic judge who won?
Well, that's right. Wisconsinites rejected this intervention, this extraordinary, unprecedented intervention by Elon Musk to basically try to buy a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, while he also has litigation pending in the state of Wisconsin over his business. I think what we're seeing in a broader sense is just the absolute degradation of the rule of law. The Constitution requires that no person be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Due process of law means not whim, not caprice, not revenge, not retaliation for not being in the fan club of this president or the men that he has put into these roles in which they're engaging in such destruction, like Elon Musk. And we are, you know, we have seen Wisconsin targeted in that way, obviously by Musk in this most recent Supreme Court race in which he was resoundingly defeated. But I think we're also seeing this broader attack, the governor of Maine, the governor of Wisconsin, other governors who dare to speak up, defend the rule of law, defend the rights and interests of their citizens, you know, to access Social Security, to have their children registered, for example, in Social Security when they're born in the United States. We're seeing this assault on the idea, the promise, the demand, the requirement under the Constitution that the writ of habeas corpus not be suspended. That by its definition means that people, if they are seized, have a right to have an independent judicial tribunal assess whether there's evidence against them, assess whether they can be held and deprived of their liberty. But Trump and this administration has leveled an assault on that legal command that Donald Trump took an oath to uphold. I question whether that oath had any meaning anymore after John Roberts waved away the criminal liability of Donald Trump in that disastrous immunity decision last summer without precedent, like the title of my book. But that unprecedented decision to say that a president is above the law, that he can break the law rather than that he has a duty to faithfully uphold the law. That's what the Constitution requires of the president, that he faithfully execute the laws. And nothing could be more faithless than breaking those laws. Nothing could be more faithless than disregarding the command, the requirement of the Constitution, of due process of law for all persons.
On Thursday, at a judges' conference in Puerto Rico, the Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson appeared to forcefully rebuke President Trump and the administration's attack on judges it deems unfavorable to its agenda. She didn't call out Trump by name, but said she was addressing, quote, the elephant in the room. Justice Brown Jackson said, quote, the attacks are not random. They seem designed to intimidate those of us who serve in this critical capacity. The threats and harassment are attacks on our democracy, on our system of government, and they ultimately risk undermining our Constitution and the rule of law. Again, those are the words of a Supreme Court Justice, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, Lisa Graves.
That's right. She's exactly right. We are seeing this assault on the independence of the judicial branch, on the separation of powers, on the notion that anyone can check the demands of this president, the idea that the president and his attorney general can just disregard longstanding laws, disregard precedents, and in fact, that they can decide not to follow the commands, the orders of courts, as we saw in the case of Judge Boasberg's order involving the Trump administration's attempts to basically evade the requirement of people getting due process in this country. So we are well into a constitutional crisis, not just because of the disobedience of court orders by Trump, but also by these attacks on judges for daring to do their job and enforce our laws and protect our rights, including that right to due process that everyone is entitled to, whether you're a citizen or immigrant in the United States. So we have a lot to do as citizens, as people in this country, to stand up, to speak out, and to not tolerate this outrageous disregard for the command of our Constitution to defend all of our rights against this authoritarian leadership that is expanding its efforts to control the American people.
So your book, Without Precedent, if you can just give us a sneak peek, it's dealing with the Chief Justice Roberts, who has at some points now sided with the liberal judges. But your subtitle, How Chief Justice Roberts and His Accomplices Rewrote the Constitution and Dismantled Our Rights. You're saying he really laid the groundwork here.
Yes, I am. In fact, I think even if he were to rule against Trump on more than a temporary basis on some of these orders, what John Roberts has done is usher in this new era. He basically signaled to the American people last summer that Trump could do no wrong, that he could not be held criminally liable for his actions, and that anything that constitutes an official act, a so-called official act, is immune from any criminal consequences or prosecution, both retrospectively and going forward. So John Roberts really paved the way for this authoritarian era we're in. He also did so by really systematically dismantling core voting rights protections in this country, along with other key rights. And so we have a situation where there is an apparent conflict in some ways between the Supreme Court right now and Donald Trump. But we've also seen John Roberts move heaven and earth basically to protect Donald Trump. So we'll see what John Roberts does in the coming weeks. But at the end of the day, John Roberts has laid the foundation for this authoritarianism, for this aggrandizement of presidential power, and for the degradation of fundamental liberties in this country, including key protections for voting rights, which were won through the blood, sweat, and tears of millions of Americans. John Roberts has dismantled key guardrails in our democracy.
And the Supreme Court ruling about facilitating the return of Kelmar Abrego Garcia, yet being extremely somewhat vague about it, and the fact that Trump has been defiant in saying no, what does that mean when it comes to executive power and judiciary power?
I was concerned about that language because even though on the surface that order seemed to command that the president take action and return this Maryland man to his home, it seemed as though it was not the strongest language that could be issued by this court. And Donald Trump has exploited that language to basically suggest that he can't do it, although he recently suggested that he could do it, he just won't do it. The fact is that this court needs to take robust action to defend the ordinary laws in this country and these norms that you just cannot ship someone out of this country, declare them a terrorist with no evidence to any independent judge to assess whether there's any validity to that. People have been removed from this country who have not been convicted of crimes, and notwithstanding the assertions of Donald Trump on that most recent interview that there are millions of murderers roaming the streets who are immigrants, that's not actually true. Many people who are convicted of crimes are serving sentences. At the end of those sentences, they are often deported. This is a fake crisis that he has basically tried to plant in people's minds in order to exercise extraordinary unconstitutional, anti-constitutional powers. And it is the duty of this Supreme Court, of our Supreme Court, to stand up for the rule of law, to stand up for the due process clause and the writ of habeas corpus, and insist that it be followed. And I'm not sure that John Roberts, given his background, given his efforts to advance the Republican Party in numerous ways, will actually stand up, or whether he will stand with other Republican appointees to the Supreme Court and find technical ways for Donald Trump to get away with this assault on core principles of our democracy and our Constitution. And quite frankly, Amy, given the fact that John Roberts invented immunity for the president, criminal immunity for the president that has never existed in our constitutional history, to have this type of immunity, this broad immunity, I don't have confidence that he will, that John Roberts and his fellow Republican appointees will correctly interpret the 14th Amendment when it comes to the rights of citizens, including American citizens born in this country, that is the first clause of the 14th Amendment. This court has veered away from the plain meaning of the Constitution, the plain language, when it suits them to aid Donald Trump. And we need to have a court, the American people deserve a court we can have confidence in that won't play partisan politics, won't put its thumb on the scale of justice in favor of Donald Trump or any other president because of their party or their allegiance or alignment.
Lisa Graves, we want to thank you for being with us, director and founder of the policy research group True North Research, co-host of the podcast Legal AF. Her forthcoming book, Without Precedent, How Chief Justice Roberts and His Accomplices Rewrote the Constitution and Dismantled Our Rights. Former Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the United States, speaking to us from Superior, Wisconsin. When we come back, award-winning journalist and author Naomi Klein. She's written a new piece, The Rise of End Times Fascism. Stay with us.
Rebel against the war they sell. Rebel against the lies they tell. Rebel and let us do this right. Rebel for all the people of Palestine. Rebel for all the people of Palestine. Rebel against the war they sell. Rebel against the lies they tell. Rebel and let us do this right. Rebel for all the people of Palestine. Rebel for all the people of Palestine.
Come on!
Rebel against the war they sell. Rebel.
Music by the NMM song team led by Rabbi Dr. Koach, Baruch Fraser and Rabbi Elia Piazza, performed at the opening plenary of the Jewish Voice for Peace National Membership Meeting this weekend in Baltimore, Maryland. Thousands turned out. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We spend the rest of the hour with award-winning journalist and author Naomi Klein. She has a major new piece out, co-authored with Astra Taylor for The Guardian newspaper. It's headlined, The Rise of End Times Fascism. It looks at the apocalyptic fervor of the far right. In it, they write, quote, the most powerful people in the world are preparing for the end of the world, and then they themselves are frenetically accelerating. That is not so far away from the more mass market vision of fortress nations that's gripped the far right globally, from Italy to Israel, Australia to the United States. In a time of ceaseless peril, openly supremacist movements in these countries are positioning their relatively wealthy states as armed bunkers, Naomi Klein writes. She's also professor of climate justice at the University of British Columbia, founding co-director of the UBC Center for Climate Justice. Her latest book, Doppelganger, A Trip into the Mirror World. Naomi, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. If you can start off by talking about your piece and what exactly you mean by talking about the end times, fascism.
Well, it's very good to be with you, Amy. This isn't the most cheerful piece I've ever written with Astra Taylor, a very close collaborator, founder of the Debt Collective. And we were trying to kind of map what is similar and what is different about the type of far-right politics that we're seeing today. And I should say the piece is not only grim, it also looks at what this can mean for a response to this particular form of fascism, because we can't fight it if we don't understand it. So I think a lot of very good scholarship attempting to understand authoritarianism today, whether it's Trump or figures like Duterte or Modi, have looked at similarities between these far-right figures and, say, Mussolini or Hitler, and have taken a kind of a checklist approach of looking at what is similar to the past, right? And I think there's a lot of value in that, but the risk of it is that it doesn't look at what is new and what is particular to our time. Fascism always is an attempt by the right to resolve a crisis of its own era, right? So in the 1930s, they were attempting to resolve, you know, in Germany, the humiliations of the First World War, the impacts of the Great Depression, and to propose a unity in the face of that, you know, for the in-group. But our moment is different, and one of the things that makes it different, I mean, if you think about fascism in the 1930s, this is before the atomic bomb, it's before they understood climate change, and we are in a moment where our elites, whether they admit it or not, do understand that our economic model, and I've written books about this and talked about it with you in the past, is at war with life on Earth, right? And they are barreling down this road of more and more extraction of fossil fuels, of all kinds of, you know, basically anything they can extract from this Earth and turn into energy and money, particularly now with AI, which is a energy and resource hog, water, LNG, critical minerals, all of it. So we're trying to understand how this is informing the kind of fascism that we're seeing. And also, we're trying to understand what unites this kind of strange Frankenstein coalition that Trump represents, where he's bringing together these, you know, the richest people in the world who have ever existed with, you know, many working class people. So what binds the vision, right? And what we come up with in this piece, or what we propose in this piece, is that they all have given up on this world. Like they all have bought into a kind of apocalyptic fever, right? Whether it's Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and their investments in outer space and sort of writing off this planet, whether AI, which is willing to sacrifice this animate world in order to build an artificial world, or whether it's the more populist MAGA vision of the fortress nation state, right, which is thinking, okay, we know more and more people are going to be coming. We know that disaster is on the horizon. I've listened to a lot of Steve Bannon for you know, when I was writing Doppelganger, and it's all very survivalist, right? It's it, you know, all of the commercials pretty much are selling, you know, gold because the economy is going to collapse, you know, ready to eat meals for 90 days because you never know what's going to happen. So it sees the nation and the in-group as being inside the bunker, and then it's exiling the out-group to all of these you know, lawless territories that you've been covering on the show. So it's not the same vision, but what it shares is this apocalyptic fever. And then, of course, all of it is following a similar structure, like narrative structure, to the biblical rapture. And of course, you have people who believe in that within the Trump coalition, who are, you know, Christian Zionists like Mike Huckabee and Pete Hegseth, who believe that the actual end times is coming, and they think it's all going to go down in Israel, and all of the horror that you report on so well and so committedly on the show. You know, these are all good signs if you believe in the rapture, right? Because it means that the end is coming and the faithful are going to be lifted up to a golden city in the sky. So, you know, what we're looking at is like the religious version of that story, the fundamentalist religious version of that story, where you literally believe you're going to be saved and taken up to heaven. But also the secular vision, where your wealth protects you or your citizenship protects you, and you get your own version of that golden bunkered city.
You mentioned Gaza, and you just came from the Jewish Voice for Peace conference in Baltimore, where several thousand people gathered from around the country. Our latest headline, the Israeli military calling up tens of thousands of reservists as Israel's Security Cabinet unanimously approved plans this weekend to expand its assault on Gaza, where Israel's already killed over 52,000 Palestinians, and that's by far an undercount. For in the last 18-19 months, Israel's killed more than 2,400 Palestinians just since it shattered the ceasefire in March. This comes as Israel's devastating blockade and food aid has entered its third month. Palestinian health officials say 57 Palestinians have already starved to death. According to UNICEF, more than 9,000 children have been admitted for treatment for acute malnutrition so far this year. And aid groups like Norwegian Refugee Council blasting a new Israeli proposal to take control and distribution and put U.S. security contractors in charge. If you can talk, as you so often do, about what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank and what the centrality of Israel in President Trump and the current U.S. government, although it was also the past, President Biden's worldview and approach to foreign policy.
So I don't think there is a single answer to understanding what the driving forces are. And this is what we're trying to get at, is that there's a kind of an overlap of these different apocalyptic worldviews. Some of them are religious and some of them are secular, right? So I think that people who subscribe to this like literalist version of the rapture believe that all of this is good news, in the sense that, according to the story that they believe in, that the Israelites have to return to greater Israel. Those are the preconditions for the return of the Messiah. They have to rebuild the third temple. So you have this convergence of interest between the religious extremists in the Netanyahu government, who are absolutely committed to rebuilding the third temple. They really want to do it. They want to destroy Al-Aqsa. This is why so much attention is focused on it. But then, you know, does Trump believe that? I don't think Trump believes that. I mean, what he views for Gaza is he sees resources, he sees money, he sees a private, you know, resort. Exactly. You know, this is what something I've been saying from the beginning. I think the interests have been fairly consistent in terms of what the end goal is, which is a depopulation of Gaza, pushing Palestinians out, whether through death or whether through forced exile, whether through ethnic cleansing. And under the Biden administration, there was a denial that that was what was going on. And under the Trump administration, it's all out in the open. So, you know, this is what is going on now. What the reason for that is, I think, differs. But this is what part of what we're getting at in the piece, Astra and I, is that there is a confluence of interest in terms of what Israel represents. Some of the supporters of the Trump administration in the tech industry are talking about wanting freedom cities, for instance, these privatized corporate cities, and they talk about this as tech Zionism. They have a lot of admiration for the idea that Israel was created. They say, you know, from a book, Theodor Herzl's books. And they say, well, why can't we start our own country, our own private countries? Why do we have to, you know, why do we have to abide by the rules of the nation state? So, you know, I think part of the support for Israel isn't just our classic understandings either of Jewish Zionism or Christian Zionism, although that's absolutely going on. It's also this idea of a very technologically advanced startup country, right? You know, Israel has marketed itself that way. And a lot of these tech companies want to do that in San Francisco. You know, they want to push everybody out who doesn't agree with them, who's poor, who have more needs, and create their kind of corporate privatized utopia. So, you know, I'm not saying this is a coherent agenda. I'm saying that there's a lot of overlapping stories that follow a similar structure and share similar goals, if that makes sense.
I mean, yes. I mean, the overall issue obviously is hard to make sense of, yeah. And most of Trump's supporters are neither wealthy nor are they Christian Zionists. So why are they backing this whole approach?
Well, it's not clear the extent to which they actively back it, but I think that they see a kinship in the ethnostate, right? Because a lot of Trump supporters are becoming increasingly Christian nationalist about the United States, and this has been, you know, carefully fostered by figures like Steve Bannon. And so when they look at Israel, they see a country that is openly an ethnostate, that is fortressing itself in a sea of its enemies, and they want to do something similar. And they're sharing technologies, they're sharing, legal precedents, tools. So there's a, there's a kinship, and and we're seeing this now with India, with its attacks on Kashmir, following us, using similar techniques that Israel has used in Gaza. So there is a kind of a solidarity of the ethnostates, and they are sharing. They're even trading trinkets of, golden pagers and swapping chainsaws. This is something that I think, when you're inside the crucible of it here in the United States under Trump, it's hard to see the extent to which this is an international project on the right, and they are influencing one another.
And what does unite them, this whole fortress mentality, is this hatred of immigrants. President Trump just saying he doesn't even know, he's not a lawyer, so he doesn't know if he has to uphold the Constitution, he said.
Right. I mean, this is what I'm trying to get at about the awareness that we are in an age of consequences, that when you don't act in the face of the climate crisis for decades after when scientists have been warning you, that more and more of the world becomes uninhabitable, and lo and behold, people move to try to find safety in the face of wars, in the face of economic deprivation, and in the face of ecological disasters. And so that fortressing of the nation state, and this is what I think Israel's come to represent, just as a very small nation that is extremely fortressed, right? Whether it's with the high-tech walls, the Iron Dome, Trump says now I want not an Iron Dome, but a Golden Dome, right? That all of this is whether it's stated explicitly
or not. A military parade that'll cost tens of millions of dollars as he slices and dices the government on his birthday in June.
So the pattern is protecting the in-group and exiling and cleansing the out-groups, right? And so that, I think, if there is support among the MAGA base for Israel, it's less out of a love for Israel than more out of an identification, like they are doing what we want to do here.
You write many things in your piece, and I just want to go to one of them. You say, in talking about Musk's apocalyptic vision, you talk about, and also detailing the end times fascism, this whole issue of the rise of the city state, the corporate city state. I think this is a new concept for many. They're not going to know what you're talking about. In Southern Texas, Starbase, just this group of people who are mainly workers at SpaceX, have just voted to make a city right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've had sort of, the idea of a company town is not entirely new, right? And Disney had Celebration Florida, and there are lineages to this, right? Colonial lineages to this. I live in Canada, which started as the Hudson's Bay Company, right? So it was a company before it was a country. So there is some precedent for this. But I think I've been following this out of the corner of my eye, Amy, because this is where the libertarians have been going for a while. Peter Thiel has been obsessed with this idea. It's increasingly being called exit, so exiting the nation and just starting your own country where you can set your own tax level, you can make your own regulations.
Or not.
And countries and these little corporate countries will compete with one another to try to attract capital, right? So in a way, it's an extension of the free trade zone, right? Where this is a denationalized country within a country. But Trump started to float this in 2023, the idea that he would create 10 freedom cities on the campaign trail. I don't think his base much knew what he was talking about, but now you have all these lobbyists who fully intend to take him up on it. And we're starting to see the beginning of this with the SpaceX city.
So you also write about El Salvador's terrorism confinement center, the notorious prison CECOT, where so many hundreds of people have been sent from the United States. And at the same time, in the last 24 hours, President Trump saying he wants to reopen the notorious Alcatraz, an island in San Francisco. If you can talk about the prison as a model for what Trump wants to put forward, and particularly in relation, as we see, motivating so much to immigrants.
Well, this is an incredibly bleak vision. So repression is always a huge part of any kind of fascist project, right? You need to contain the outgroup. You need to disappear the outgroup. So this part of it is not new. But I think what is so worrying to me is that Trump was elected promising all kinds of things to his base, right? He promised to eliminate inflation. He promised to bring these great jobs home. He's not delivering on any of that. So the sadistic part of his project is really all he has to offer, right? I think one of the most chilling things I've ever seen in the United States was Trump sharing that video at his 100-day rally of just pure sadism, of just looking at prisoners as entertainment, being shaved, being shackled, being paraded. And he's not delivering on the price of eggs, and he's not delivering on the jobs, by the way, because he's throwing all in, he's going all in on AI. So the jobs that are coming back seem to be mainly for robots. It's not actually for his base. And so this scales up the need for the sadism and these spectacles, right? And I think that that's what something like Alcatraz represents. He's a TV producer, first and foremost, right? He's producing spectacles. And the less he has to offer economically, tangibly, materially, the more he leans on the sadism.
You write, the governing ideology of the far right has become a monstrous supremacist survivalism. Our task is to build a movement strong enough to stop them. Mm-hmm. What would that movement look like, or what do you see is being formed right now?
Mm-hmm. You know, what we're doing in this piece by laying out the bleakness of the vision. And when I say bleakness, I think it's beyond something we've seen before, because there's always an apocalyptic quality to fascism, but fascism of the 1930s and 40s had a horizon. Like, after the apocalypse, people were being promised a future, a pastoral, peaceful little piece of land where they could live out their lives, you know? Even though Trump talks about a golden age, there really isn't a future that the base believes in. You know, and this is what I've learned by consuming far too much MAGA media, Amy. They envision a future of endless war, right? And this is why they're bunkering down. This is why they're buying ready-to-eat meals to last. This is why they're buying gold and crypto. They think the whole thing is going down. So,
and why Elon Musk is trying to have so many children, at least 14 at this point, but he's actually explicitly texted it, saying, we've got to do this much faster, as he proposed to one of the women he has children with, saying, we got to start using surrogates.
So they don't believe in the future, is the bottom line. And that is, I think I've been in a lot of progressive spaces in recent months where we've talked about building these very broad coalitions, including with people who we don't entirely disagree with. I've never encountered a potential coalition more broad than the idea of, how about if we believe in this world? How about if we believe in the future? Because we're up against people who are actively betting against the future, right? Not just actively betting against it, but fueling the fires that are burning this world, actively fueling it. So I think that if we have the courage really to look at the bleakness of what they believe in, which is an apocalyptic future, then we have our work cut out for us.
Fiber Plus internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.
that old devil called love again gets behind me and keeps giving me that show again, putting rain in my eyes, tears in my dreams, and rocks in my heart. It's that